You are listening to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for June 2000. This is issue number 183, and I'm your host, Fred Vobey, the publisher of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service. On this edition, we'll hear from Jerry Starr with the AM Switch. John Bowker starts us off at 570 on the East Coast, and Mark Durenberger has a very interesting interview with a very interesting engineer. We'll also hear some ratings information from Chicago and what's happening at 670 via Ken Anischuk. Bruce Conti and Mark Conley look at the DX year. I'll be live on Memorex from the Dayton Hamvention. And DX Audio Service member and production guru Wally Walro lets us hear a tower that's going to be cut down. That's on this edition of the DX Audio Service. Right now, here's Von Smitschmeister, Mr. Jerry Starr, with a look at the AM Switch. Jerry?
Hi, everybody. Jerry Starr with another edition of AM Switch, right out of the pages of the National Radio Club's DX News Magazine. This month, reference number 481 starts with these call letter changes. On 540, KNOB, Costa Mesa, California, changing to KKGO. 610, KSKE, Vail, Colorado, becoming KVLE. On 610 also, KSVA in Albuquerque, New Mexico becomes KHTL. That's half of a swap. On 920, KHTL in Albuquerque becomes, you guessed it, KSVA. 1060 KLMO, Longmont, Colorado, changing to KSKE. 1120 WBNM, Gordon, Georgia becomes WXJO. 1170 KOHO, Honolulu, Hawaii, changing to KBUG. 1190 KESE, Bentonville, Arkansas, becomes KREB. 1220 KWPA in Pomona, California, becomes KWKU. 1530 WOBR, Wenchese, North Carolina, changing to WOBX. 1540 KCTD, Los Angeles, California, becomes KMPC as that call returns to the LA market. 1560 KMPC in Abilene, Texas, where the call came from, changes to KZQQ. 1570 KOSZ, Vermilion, South Dakota, changing to KUTK. And in the expanded band on 1660 KBJC, Kansas City, Kansas, becomes KWSJ. And on 1690 WMDM, Lexington Park, Maryland, becomes WPTX as their primary station goes dark. Three new stations were granted on 880 in Sparks, Nevada, 5,000 watts daytime, 400 watts night, separate patterns day and night. On 1090 in Hawthorne, Nevada, they will be 8,000 watts daytime, 250 watts night, a U7 antenna. In other words, they will be non-directional at night, directional during the daytime. And on 1640 in Biloxi, Mississippi, new station for the expanded band, and the first one granted with these power levels, 5,000 daytime, 500 watts night, exactly half of what normally is granted in the X-band, and they will be non-directional day and night. Two grants of interest to existing stations on 1050 KBBV in Big Bear Lake, California, will be changing to Loma Linda, California. Their power will be 250 watts non-directional daytime only. And on 1580 KIVA in Albuquerque, New Mexico, moves up the dial to 1600 kilohertz, and that change is already on the air. And in otherness, on 540 KNOB, Costa Mesa, California, we told you about their upcoming call change to KKGO, their owner, Saul Levine, has announced his intention to take this station off the air and turn in the license, in his words, in the near future, due to persistent interference problems. In several years, they'll be required to take either this facility or their 1650 Torrance facility off the air anyway, and when we get to 1650, we'll tell you why that one is staying around. Elsewhere in otherness, on 600 CIQC, Montreal, Quebec, is now silent. That programming has moved elsewhere. 660 WORL, Altamont Springs, Florida. We told you a couple months ago, reports that this station were on the air were false. It is now on the air, no longer a false alarm. WORL now maintaining a full-time schedule. On 700 CKRD in Red Deer, Alberta, their 105.5 FM is on the air, and the AM has left the air permanently. 730 WBZS, Alexandria, Virginia, this silent station has returned to the air. 850 CKVL in Verdun, Quebec has also gone silent as that program moves elsewhere. 1120 KCLE in Cleburne, Texas, their switch to 1140, along with the KJSA 1140 switch to 1120, is now set for the end of May. 1200 KOQI in Soquel, California has been heard testing on the air. This will be a new station. 1200 CKXM in Victoria, British Columbia. Their 91.3 FM is now on the air. The AM is scheduled to leave the air in June. 1230 WMAF Madison, Florida is back on the air. 1260 WMMM in Westport, Connecticut. This station has been IDing on the air as WSHU, which of course stands for Sacred Heart University, the people who now own the station. They claim that this call has been officially changed. However, the FCC database shows WMMM is still the call of record. We called the FCC directly today. They confirmed that that call was never changed and remains WMMM, although WSHU is being used as the official on-the-hour ID. Very strange. 1310 KIQQ in Barstow, California is back on the air. 1360 WBLC Lenoir City, Tennessee has returned to the air also. 1380 WTMC Wilmington, Delaware is now back on the air. They have an all-traffic format. On 1410 CIGO in Port Hawkesbury, Nova Scotia, their 101.5 FM is on the air, and the AM is due to leave the air within the next 90 days. 1550 WKQV in Pittston, Pennsylvania has gone silent. 1570 CKTA in Tabor, Alberta, their 93.3 FM is on. The AM has already left the air. 1620 WTAW College Station, Texas, this new X-band station now on the air. And on 1560 KGXL in Torrance, California, in case you ever wondered about the value of one of these X-band facilities, they seem to become quite valuable in the larger markets. This suburban Los Angeles facility has signed an agreement to be sold to new owners for, are you ready for this, $30 million. And on 1660 KAXW in Merced, California, another new station that is now on the air. That'll wrap it up for this month. 30 days from now, in the heat of summer, we'll bring you more hot information from the broadcast band. Right now, let's send it down to where it's always hot in paradise. Here's John Bowker.
Well, thanks once again, Jerry, and hello, everyone. This is the Travelogue program segment of the DX Audio Service, and what you're going to be hearing for the next few minutes are recordings made of the legal station breaks of AM stations in the eastern half of the United States. And they all have one thing in common. They all come in at 570 on your AM radio dial. Say, before we get started too far, I want to thank some of our listeners who have sent in cassette tapes in the past month. Ron Gitchier, two very tasty compilations. I'm still downloading, Ron. Thanks so very much. And I hope you have good luck out there in the Caribbean, where I know you're serving the United States so very well. And do keep in touch. And Mike Lance, well, now he's down the Miami Beach region. He sent in a tape of some recent changes on stations down that-a-way. And Mike, I'm going to have to get back to you with answers to some of your questions, but we'll do that. And we're going to see you out at the convention in Lima, Ohio. That's great news, Mike. And Scott Feibusch contributed a collection of his recent catches. He's from Rochester, New York, but he's been traveling around the country. So that's great, Scott. And Phil Wayne, I got to tell you about Phil Wayne. Phil got in his car and drove almost all the way to Detroit last month from his home in Toledo to get us the cut you heard of WLLZ at 560, the station in Monroe, Michigan. And Phil, that's beyond the call of duty, but much appreciated, particularly on such a rush basis. Wow. And the quality of the audio of that station, what an embarrassment to Fred. You know, Fred Volpe set up the audio processing for that station, and I guess what the new management has done, Fred left there years ago. They've probably just turned all the little knobs to the right because, you know, louder is better. Oh, boy. And Fred, to you too, sir. Special thanks for snuggling Phil's recording into the program that I had sent you. It all sounded very natural and as though I had something to do with it. So thanks again, guys. Now, just about all the stations on this channel of 570 operate with 5,000 watts. There are a few exceptions, as usual, and I'm going to call those out to you as we hear from them as best I can. This is, by the way, a semi-rare frequency because I am delighted to tell you we have some audio from every single station in the United States operating at 570 on the dial. Now, some of them may have changed their call letters since these recordings were made, but by George, with the help of many of you, we've been able to be there and we've done that. So, now, if you'll check your logbook, you're going to find that there are no stations in any of the six New England states operating at 570. So we're going to stay west of the Hudson River. We're going to drop down to the Big Apple and tune into the McAlpin Hotel Station as we begin the June 2000 DX Audio Service Travelogue.
World and national news up next. This is WMCA, Strauss Communications in New York. This is Good Guy Radio. AP Network News. Good morning, I'm Cynthia Hecht.
And who says New Yorkers talk faster than some other people?
We've stopped taking calls for the BMR correspondents because, wow, we're just backlogged. And we have a name and a claimant winner there. Jackie Chastel of Forest Hills, a name and a claimant winner on that first call from Queens, and she won Baby It's You by the Shirelles.
WMCA.
Nightly 7 to 11, and here's number 17 on the Good Guy Survey.
It's my party and I'm glad I want it.
Now, in recent years, WMCA has switched to a format of all religion, and quite honestly, I don't have any representative recording of that. So to make up for that, let's go back and hear a couple of the jingles they used 35 years ago in New York.
570 WMCA.
Okay, let's go up to upstate New York next.
News Radio 57, WSYR, Syracuse. With Central New York's largest local news team. This is the NBC Radio Network. I'm Don Blair.
Okay, Don, and you know, the image that WSYR promotes is the place to tune to when anything big happens. So we tune to WSYR.
Weather Station, AM 570, WSYR, Syracuse.
Good afternoon, 63 degrees at 4 o'clock. I'm Chris Trankman. The Weather Center forecast for tonight, cloudy skies, showers expected, low near 50.
And here's another variant on their ID.
If it's happening now, you're hearing it now on Central New York's News and Weather Station, News Radio 570, WSYR, Syracuse.
8 o'clock at 73 degrees, mostly cloudy skies in Syracuse. I'm Chris Van Dusen, News Radio 570 WSYR.
Okay, it's time to get back in the motorhome and travel south down the interstate into the District of Columbia. Well, okay, just outside the District of Columbia in Maryland.
You're listening to Tempo, and the time is 10:53 and a half. You're listening also to your good music stations, WGMS Bethesda and WGMS FM Washington, 103.5 on your FM dial. I'm Nicole Lacroix. I'm standing in for John Chester.
Okay, and next comes one of those IDs, well, of the stuffy variety.
WGMS AM Bethesda, FM Washington, serving the nation's cultural capital.
I think there are a lot of places that would argue with that. However, good music is a hard sell, even in the cultural capital of the country, if that's what Washington is. So just in the last year or so, they've decided to try something else.
You're listening to the most talked about talk radio station in town. Sports Talk 570 WTEM Bethesda, Washington.
83 degrees at 10. I'm Andy Poland with this 2020 team ticker. Last time the Sonics made the finals, they beat the Bullets for the championship. That was 17 years ago.
You know, by the way, the WTEM call letters are now being used downtown in Washington at the old WRC 980 site. And 570 in Bethesda, the station you just heard, has switched with that, and they are now using the call sign WWRC. Now, Linda and I are going to be up that way here in another 3 months, and we're going to get a recording, if we possibly can, at 570 as we go through the district area. But now, being in Maryland, if you head south, just south of Virginia, in fact, here's what you hear as you enter North Carolina.
Your music station.
WLLE.
We're making it fresh.
WLLE.
And here are some more details on that station.
Radio station WLLE in Raleigh, North Carolina, signing off for another broadcast day. WLLE is owned and operated by Special Markets Media Incorporated and operates on an assigned frequency of 570 kilohertz authorized by the Federal Communications Commission, Washington, D.C. Our tower and transmitter are located at 649 Maywood Avenue, Raleigh, with studios and offices at 522 East Martin Street, Raleigh. The staff and management of WLLE hopes you and your family have a safe and pleasant evening, and that you'll join us again tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Until then, have yourself a good night.
I was afraid that record in the background was stuck. Maybe you thought the same. However, in 1997, that station was sold, and a familiar pattern emerged. I should mention, this station operates with only 500 watts.
Today's Christian Talk and Information Station for the Triangle, WRDT Raleigh.
And 250 miles to the west of Raleigh, 570 comes alive again, right near the foot of the Blue Ridge Parkway.
I thought that he walked on water.
Randy Travis, he walks on water. Just got a call from a guy who said, I'll be so glad when you give that house and the car and that stuff away. He said, so my employees will go back to work. He said they got radios hidden in their pockets and their pocketbooks, and he said that's all they talk about is that contest. WWNC Asheville, Hendersonville, where we're going to brighten your life. It's 3 o'clock.
Good afternoon, I'm Paul Davis. WWNC News, 83 degrees under sunny skies.
That sounds pretty nice. And the weather's getting better the further south we get, it sounds like. So let's keep going. Down toward the southeast corner of Georgia.
Partly cloudy. Our highs back up to the mid-70s to near 80.
This is your big 5,000-watt voice at Waycross, WACL, serving our friends and neighbors in Sea Island and almost everyone in Georgia and Florida with gospel music.
It's 11 o'clock.
The following 60-minute broadcast has been paid for by Fowler for Senate.
Oh, my goodness. Did you hear that? A 60-minute political... Oh, paid for by a Senate candidate. That's pretty innovative, I guess, isn't it? Now, here comes an announcer in a terrific part of the country who is reading from an erroneous script. Let me clue you. Tampa Bay is a body of water. It is not a city.
You're in touch with the city of Tampa Bay, and we're the talk of Tampa Bay. News Talk 57 WPLP Pinellas Park.
Okay, now, maybe there were more errors than that, because back in the middle 80s, I guess 1988, actually, WPLP was sold. And who could possibly misunderstand the purpose of the new station that took its place using call letters like these?
The Discovery has finally been delivered to Cape Canaveral. We'll have details after CBS News at 2 o'clock.
Talk Radio 57, WTKN, Pinellas Park, Tampa, Clearwater, St. Petersburg.
News. This is Judy Muller.
Judy Muller. Judy and I worked on WHWH together for a couple of years, and it was a very, very pleasant time. Judy was just a delight to work with. But guess what? You heard WTKN, obviously a talking station, but the craze to spell the word wins in every possible way caught up in the Tampa Bay area, and in 1991, a new station was born.
0570 in St. Tampa, 876-0570, Sarasota, 957-0570. All news 570 wins.
WHNZ, Pinellas Park, Tampa, St. Petersburg, a service of Paxson Broadcasting. All news 570 wins. Grim details on Dahmer.
Oh, dear, we don't need to hear any more about Jeffrey Dahmer, I'm sure. You know, the Winds call sign slogan worked better. Lots of talk on the station and CBS News on the hour, and it lasted almost a decade. And then, earlier this year, a big call sign swap and license shift happened on the sun coast of Florida. WHNZ, that you just heard, moved up to 1250 on the dial. And WDAE, the first radio station in Florida, moved from 1250 down to 620, replacing what we all remember so fondly as WSUN, except that that had already changed its call letters several times. Oh, dear. So WDAE is now at 620, and 570 changed its call sign that very day of switching frequencies to WTBN, standing for Tampa Bay News. So here is a recording of their ID. And oh, if only every station in the country would take the FCC identification requirement as seriously as my friends do at WTBN.
You're listening to CNN Headline News on AM 570. WTBN, Pinellas Park, Tampa Bay.
Well, I guess I've used up enough Florida air on this trip around the country, so let's move north once again.
You're listening to WAAX Gadsden, your connection to the WERC Talk Network.
From ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson.
All right, Chuck, and our final stop this month on the travelogue, we'll finish up the 570 dial position on the Gulf Coast over in the state of Mississippi.
The opinions expressed by the host and their guest on these programs are not necessarily the opinions of the management of this station or their owner.
Chicken.
WVMI, Biloxi, Gulfport, Pascagoula, with news on the hour. Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm John Belmont.
Hi, John. Well, we'll pick up next month in the Midwest, eastern Ohio, in fact, with a station in Youngstown. And I can see Jerry Starr waving me off saying, oh, John, just go somewhere else, will you? I'll explain that to you in a month from now on the travelogue. But now here comes a fellow who doesn't need any explanation, just a respectable introduction. Bruce Conti in the DX Digest. Hi, Bruce.
Thank you, John, and hello, DXers. Here we are in June, and another DX season has come and gone. Or as international DXer Mark Connolly has been known to say, the DX season ends on the same day the new season begins, on the longest day of the year. That, of course, is the first day of summer, which occurs this year on June 21st. With that in mind, I talked to Mark about the 1999-2000 DX season.
This season was not as good for Northern European stations as, let's say, 1995 and 96 had been. 96 was particularly good, I think, around December of that year. We had some extraordinary receptions. But there have been some good sessions towards the eastern end of the Mediterranean and the Middle East in general. Africans have been somewhat off from other seasons. The Angolan stations have only been heard occasionally and not particularly with good signals, and I haven't heard Lesotho lately on 1197, even though they're still on. And Brazil, not too much from there, except the usual stations out of Fortaleza on 760 and a few others out of Brazil. But the most interesting area this season has been the eastern end of the Mediterranean and going farther east into Central Asia and the Middle Eastern area of the Persian Gulf. I would say one of my best receptions was Armenia on 864. I had them over Egypt, which is the normal dominant on that channel. I heard this out at the Duxbury site with just the loop and whip scheme on top of the car, and it was coming in quite well, and I managed to capture it on tape for some real audio that's now available on the web. And I have been getting involved with that, along with Jean Brunel and several other people, getting loggings taped and dispersed on the internet. One night out at Rockport, I had very good Saudi Arabia reception on not just the usual 1521, but also managed to hear 594 very clear, and also 1440, which is a domestic channel. I managed to hear the Saudi over Portland, Maine, which is not bad at all. Other nights I've heard Jordan on 801, I've heard Israel on 1206, Greece on several channels including 981, I had Sudan on 1296 about 40 over 9, one night out at the Granite Pier site in Rockport. Same night I also heard tentative Kuwait on 1134 behind Croatia, which is the normal top dog on that channel. So that's some of the more interesting catches. As you probably know, I pretty much specialize in foreign DX. Latin America has been unimpressive, not really any noteworthy receptions from down that way. Like to catch a good aurora some night and be at a coastal location where I could take advantage of it. There was a fairly good session around the 7th and the 8th of April, and managed to hear some of the best ever Bahamas signals on 810 and 1540. As well as numerous Cubans and some of the other Caribbean islands. It seemed to be a short skip aurora, not too much from beyond Venezuela going south. Those are some of the highlights, and as I said, compared to some of the other seasons, I think we're a little bit off on the Latin Americans and the Africans. We're also off on the Northern Europeans. It seems like it's more of a Spain and West Africa dominated listening environment normally, with some good signals out of the UK and Ireland on occasion, and Germany, and better nights will open up towards the eastern end of the Mediterranean.
Mark Connolly with highlights of the past DX season. To celebrate the closing of the DX season and the start of a new one, the NRC and DXAS invite you to join the first annual Longest Day of the Year DX Challenge. The contest takes place during the 24-hour period of Wednesday, June 21st, the first day of summer. Simply DX during that 24-hour period and submit your logs. Your entry may be for the 24-hour period per UTC, Eastern Time, or your local time. Each logging should include the time of reception and details of what was heard, following the domestic or international DX Digest formats used in the NRC's DX News magazine. Domestic and international logs are weighted as follows. Domestic logs inside your time zone are worth 1 point each. Domestic logs outside your time zone are worth 2 points each. International logs are worth 3 points each. Prizes will be awarded to contest winners from each time zone. The deadline for contest entry is July 1st, so winners can be announced in the July 17th edition of DX News. All logs will be published in DX News in a special Longest Day of the Year report. You may send your June 21st logs to me, Bruce Conti, at 46 Ridgefield Drive, Nashua, New Hampshire, 03062-1174, or by email to bacontiaol.com. The contest is open to all NRC and DXAS members. That's the Longest Day of the Year DX Challenge on the first day of summer, June 21st. Join the fun, help celebrate the first DX season of the new millennium. More next time on the DX Digest. I'm Bruce Conti, 73 and good DX.
Hi, this is Wally Warrow at WFAA-TV in Dallas, Texas. Recently, I went through a box of old audio cassette tapes and found one labeled July 1979 San Antonio. On it was the most interesting air check that I'd totally forgotten about. It seems that my wife and I had gone to the Alamo City for a week's vacation, and listening to the various stations in town, we pretty much settled on 550 KTSA for entertainment as we drove around the city. Well, one morning, I heard them announce that one of their radio towers was going to be taken down at lunchtime. I told my wife that I just had to see this, and even though we had only been married about 3 months, she agreed. We parked our car in a small subdivision near the tower site. It seems like a number of other people had the same idea, and we had a perfect view of the tower in question. I had a small Radio Shack AM-FM cassette recorder, which I tuned to KTSA. I pressed the record button, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Tonight I'm gonna break away.
Well, that's great, cousin. In about 10 minutes, tower number one is gonna break away. KTSA, this day in steel is 12:11. In case you just joined us, we've been mentioning all morning not to be outdone by the crash of Skylab. We're going to make an impact of our own around 12 noon. It was pushed back a little bit. We're about 10 minutes away. What's going to happen is, I'll explain it to you. See, since when I first moved to South Texas about 3 months ago, I was really impressed with the signal of this radio station. I mean, you can hear KTSA almost all over Texas. However, Waterman Broadcasting, in an attempt to get a bigger and better than ever signal, is going to put up a brand new tower. The hitch is, we got to bring down the old one first. And they're going to drop it right next to me in about 10 minutes. Charlie Brown's up on the roof. We've got some TV news crews out there, so there's no need to come over to the station. We don't want anybody getting in the way of this thing, because it is heavy and it is going to come falling down. In fact, I think all three TV stations are outside with their cameras. I'm going to take a picture of it, and I'm sure you'll see it tonight on the news.
I'm looking for some action.
KTSA, there's about 100 people, I think, out in our parking lot with their heads up, looking at tower number one, as promised, is going to come crashing to the ground. Charlie Brown is up on the roof. I don't know if Charlie can hear me or not.
Dan, I can hear you just fine. We're on top of the roof here at KTSA Radio on Eisenhower Road, and what we're doing is we're about to equal the impact of Skylab, at least here in San Antonio anyway. We're planning on making some technical improvements to the sound of KTSA Radio, and in order to do that, our number one tower here out at our four-tower complex on Eisenhower Road is about to come tumbling down here momentarily. Mm. It's over 410 feet tall. The people from the tower company who have been making the necessary preparations are about ready to lower the tower. Hopefully, if you're anywhere in northeast San Antonio, what you'll be seeing is our tower number one, which is, as you look towards our set of towers, it'll be the furthest tower south towards downtown. It'll be, if you're looking from the east, it'll be the tower on the far left. If you are looking from the west, it'll be the tower on the far right. I had to do that myself to figure out what I'm doing here.
Uh-huh.
So if you will look towards the skies, and hopefully if you're anywhere in the area, if you're in your car, be real careful. You know, we don't want any wrecks this afternoon. Captain K, Sheldon Koshorek, is about ready momentarily to cut the final cable, which will be causing the tower to fall towards the southwest. And it'll be falling into a complete open area, totally safe and totally within the property of KTSA Radio, but it should be quite a sight. We have all three television stations here this afternoon. Channel 12, Channel 5, and Channel 4 are here right now, and they'll be shooting film of it. And hopefully this evening you'll be able to see it on the 5, 6, and 10 o'clock news. And we should be ready momentarily. We have a lot of photographers here. The San Antonio Express News is here, along with the San Antonio Light, so it'll be in the papers. And we have quite a few still photographers and just curious onlookers around. We have San Antonio Police here for security and accident prevention and things like that. And momentarily, we should be ready. As you're looking, if you're in the northeast area of San Antonio, if you're looking from the east, it'll be the tower on the far left. If you're looking from the west, it will be the tower on the far right at our four tower complex here at KTSA Radio on Eisenhower Road. What they will be doing, they have we have sets of guy wires here at the station, a set of let's see, three guy wires on each one of the three sets of guy wires. So what will actually be happening is one set of guy wires is released, the tension from the other two will pull the tower away to the open area, hopefully.
Charlie?
I don't know about being up on the roof. There's nowhere to run in case this thing goes the other way.
Charlie?
Dan, if I give you the signal, you know when to duck.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we got it all handled here. About how, Gary Watker, our chief engineer, is here with us, and about how long will it be before they start cutting the cables and taking off the slack?
Okay, right now the outer guy lines, as can be seen if you're out here, are being loosened right now, and they're about to be cut. The tower will not fall when those are removed. It should not fall, but there's a chance it will, so that will happen momentarily. The whole tower, the whole process should be finished now in a matter of minutes, so this is the first step here in the final phase.
And how high is that tower?
The whole tower is about 407 feet high to the very top where the light is, which is still on there.
And how close are we, where we're broadcasting from right now, and the roof of KTSA, is it to the base of the tower?
Well, like about 150 feet.
Or and the tower is over 400 feet high. I sure hope this thing falls the other way, folks, or else Bruce may have to come back from vacation very early. They're still loosening the guy wires out here at KTSA Radio, so it should be quite an awesome sight. We're going to stay right here where we are for the time being.
Who's the wise guy that painted the X right here on the floor that I'm standing on?
I don't know, but hopefully in just a couple more minutes now, it should be crumbling down. What they're doing is loosening it so they have controllability over the path of the fall of the tower. They start from the outside with the guy wires, and as those are slackened, then they start to loosen the inner wires. And if the tower stays up to the very last series of wires, then when they cut that last wire, she sure to go at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So it could go at any minute now as they loosen the outer.
I see. Well, I'll tell you what. How about if I run a couple of commercials here in case we get knocked off the air so we all get paid this week, all right?
Hey, do it real quick and check back with me.
All right.
Okay?
Moving on to John's Jeans in Ingram Park and Windsor Park Mall.
Wally will be back with us in July for part two of the Fall of KTSA. Right now, let's yield to the gentleman from Minneapolis with a very interesting interview with a gentleman who has made some radio history. And Mark was good enough to go south and record this interview for us.
Mark Dernberger here with another Clear Channel band scan, and once again, we're on the road to Nokomis, Florida, to pick up on an interview we began a year or so ago with longtime engineer Augie Prestholt. In this next two-part series here on the DX Audio Service, Augie's going to tell us about his experiences with CBS, about what happened when an airplane hit the High Island, New York tower that was shared by CBS and NBC, and about the time vandals dropped the KNX tower in Los Angeles. Augie, let's cut right to the chase. I'm curious about High Island because you had such a major role in developing that site. I understand things did not go too smoothly in the initial design.
That's the first time I almost had a nervous breakdown. I was doing the CBS part of it, and two guys, Lester Looney and I knew them both very well, but they couldn't agree with each other.
These were the NBC guys.
These two guys were trying to build a plant, and I talked to him. Yeah, let's do it this way. No, let's do it this way. Let's do it this way. I was going nuts.
So how did you resolve it?
I guess I had complained to my boss, who complained to Paley, who complained to Sarnoff, who said, let's fix it. And a VP in the operations part of NBC, whom I didn't know, called me, said, let's have lunch. So we went over to a place on Fifth Avenue, and one of my favorite haunts in those days, one of his too. We started talking, and he started telling me what he was there for. That Mr. Sarnoff has said that I should take over the control of this project for NBC, and if you have any trouble getting a decision, call me.
Uh-huh.
I broke down and cried.
It was that distressful for you to have to deal with this?
I just about came unglued. And I broke down and I cried before we could finish the drink and lunch. After that...
Got the job done.
Got the job done.
Now, you also mentioned that you... This is when you and I first started talking about doing this. You talked about how you had to dismantle Columbia Island.
Oh, yeah.
Columbia Island was the site that was... It was a man-made concrete island built by CBS just for that station, correct?
Exactly right.
We've had... The DX Audio Service listeners have heard a story about how Columbia Island was built, which would have been 1940, 41, somewhere in there, I think.
At least that far back.
Yeah. So once you had High Island running, they wanted you to decommission this concrete island. Why?
They wanted to sell it.
Sell the land, the island? How big was it?
It was a fortress.
A lot of concrete.
I don't know what it's being used for now, if anything. But
it didn't work? I mean, the tower was in the middle of this thing, and then everything, the counterpoise and everything was in the water?
It worked. Couldn't afford to keep the Navy. We had a two- or three-boat Navy.
Doing maintenance?
I had to get out the island, just for transportation.
So the CBS Navy, which existed for a few years, was finally disbanded. It wasn't sunk or shot down or anything else. It was just decommissioned.
It was decommissioned.
And how did you take the tower down?
Well, I let a contract to a guy from Long Island. There was nothing on it that was useful to us. We weren't going to use it anyway. He was a junk dealer going to take it down. Working on it the first day, taking the hat off the top. Something happened. I don't know whether he didn't have the right cables or whether he had something. Anyway, he dropped the first pick down the top of the building. The only people in there were one or two of his guys, and they were in another part of the building, fortunately. But the first pick fell out of the hoist right through the top of the building.
Thank God nobody was hurt.
Yeah.
Did you take him off the job?
No, he finished the job.
Did he take it down in pieces or drop the whole thing?
Oh, I had to take it down in pieces. No
place. So he used a gin pole and just did the opposite of the way you put him up?
Yeah.
So it just cost too much to maintain the island. You shipped off the transmitter. Did that go over to the other site as the auxiliary then, or was that thing already obsolete?
I think it was obsolete. We didn't move it over to the new site.
You were involved in the High Island disaster when a plane hit the radio tower. Can you tell us about that?
I remember one day, Sunday, the phone rang. Hello? The other end says, Augie, this is Dave Voorhees. You coming out here? And I said, where and why? Don't you know? Our tower came down. Somebody flew into the damn thing, and we're off the air.
How tall was that?
528 feet. One wing hit the tower, one wing hit the lowest guy. The fuselage went between them, shot 1,000 feet over the water before it hit the water. The guy had Friday or Saturday taken a bunch of guys out to Montauk Point for swimming. He borrowed the same plane again Sunday afternoon, flew out to get them coming back. It was a little bit thick. He went down to see where the hell he was. And now, that's Orchard Beach. I'll just turn this way and get right over where I'm going.
Boom.
Right through the tower.
Was it a light plane?
Fairly light, yeah. They never did count how many people were in it. 6, 7, or 8. They had numbers of pieces. And they couldn't fit them together to count how many were in it.
And the whole tower went down?
The whole tower went down, one heap. But what am I going to do about fixing it up? Well, let me see. Let me call my friends at Towers, Philadelphia area. This is Sunday, but I know the guys well. That we lost a tower at High Island. What have you got in the lot? We need an auxiliary, quick. oh, we got about 300 feet of, or 250 feet. He said, okay, that'll do fine. Get in the truck and get it going to High Island right now. I expect to see it tonight or tomorrow. My God, they got the damn thing out. It was there in the morning. Now we got to get in the air quickly.
So you were literally off the air on 880. What was NBC doing to get back on?
Well, NBC used to diplex with ABC. It was Jay-Z Tower in New Jersey. They had already arranged for that, so we couldn't get in there. Well, you could try WOR. Called them, talked to them. Yeah, I went out to see what kind of stuff they had. No way to make it work. I get back at the plant, and somebody from management called and said, WLIB has got their old site down by the Triborough Bridge. Can you use it? I said, well, I'll go see what they got and see what we can do. So I went over, and we found that they had a tower. They had a feed line out there. They had a bunch of stuff. They had a transmitter that was a 5 kilowatt transmitter, I think. I had one of our crystals in my pocket. Had somebody get the transmitter going. I looked into the antenna system and guess I had a bridge along and stuff and proceeded to tune up the damn antenna on 880. And we were on the air 5 kilowatts before morning. We were on the air at night.
And weren't they on like 1180, 1190, 1200?
Something like that, yeah.
And that tower worked okay.
Well, it was a short tower, but what the hell?
Sure.
I know how to feed the damn things. So I did.
Well, there's some irony here. Your AM station had been scheduled to start its new all news and information format on Monday morning. Of course, they weren't on the air. So they, as I recall the story, they put it on the FM station. And having WCBS AM on the FM allowed you to get a signal out to the WLIB temporary transmitter site.
Sure.
So you're on the air. You get on that morning, or the early that morning, on the WLIB tower. How long before you had the steel back up?
The steel came in. We had to have 3 guy anchors planted to take this tower that I had coming. And one of our guys is a good structural man. He got a hold of 3 steel buckets that were a yard cube. Some guy anchors that had big fan or something on the bottom of them that won't pull up, filling them up with concrete already to drop into the places where they want the 3 anchors to hold that auxiliary in.
Now, as I recall the story, you picked this corner for a reason. You already had some infrastructure in place. You were using one of the guy wires on the existing tower as a actual backup antenna, was that?
When we built the plant, the northwest guy was designed to be an emergency antenna.
But how did that help you?
That guy has a coupling house at the bottom, emergency antenna for both of us. That was the auxiliary antenna. When we paint this thing or whatever the hell we got to do, we got to have something to use.
So you had the guy wire set up as the antenna.
But the guy wire is gone.
But the guy wire is gone because
the tower is gone. Yeah. But the coupling house isn't. The transmission line feed it, the coupling house to match and all this sort of stuff.
So you got 250 feet going up.
About that. Right by that guy anchor. Had that up, the bucket for the concrete, 2. One is to hold them, 2 is so the stuff hardens quickly and you can use it before too long. I think it was Tuesday that we had the tower up. Either Tuesday, Wednesday morning, sometime there, we fired it up with 5 kilowatts each. One of the riggers was up painting the tower, and when he pulled the brush away, the arcs were too long, and he decided he wasn't going to finish painting the tower.
You were, the painter was getting burned on the tower from the signal? How much power were you putting into the tower?
5 kilowatts each in there, so got pretty hot. Got it on the air a day or so after.
Yeah, the record shows that you went back on the air at 9:17 Monday night.
Carried the damn thing for, I don't know how long.
So Augie's flying squad leaps into action and got it back on the air, and that was pretty fast. And it was particularly fascinating that you could get on the air on the 1190 tower that quickly. There are a couple of other stories that you could tell. For example, KNX.
I can tell you a good story about KNX.
But we need to save that one, I think, until the next time we visit, because we are out of time here. Once again, thank you, Augie Prestolt, for your time, and this has been fascinating. We hope to be able to continue this conversation.
Sure.
Mark Dernberger on location with our Clear Channel Band Scan. We're part of the DX Audio Service, and we're in Nokomis, Florida at the moment. We'll be back again next month to continue our story about the KNX tower disaster. Till then, good listening, DXers.
Thanks, Mark. And on side two of this cassette, at the end, we're going to have information about the 2000 National Radio Club Convention, which is going to be held over Labor Day weekend here in Lima, Ohio. I'm glad to announce that my family and I will be your host for hopefully an enjoyable weekend in Lima as we talk about DX and get to meet all our friends. By the way, Ernie Wesolowski is accepting bids for the 2001 National Radio Club Convention, the location of which will be announced here in Lima at the 2000 convention. If you're serious about doing a convention, you need to send Ernie a serious bid. Forward it to him by no later than August the 1st, 2000. His address is 13312 Westwood Lane, Omaha, Nebraska, 68144-3543. And again, if you're serious about putting on a convention for the National Radio Club in your hometown, get that information to Ernie as soon as possible. If you don't know what you need to send, you might want to consider contacting Ernie like right now, and then get the details, and then submit your bid no later than August the 1st. Well, let's flip over to side two of this cassette, hear from Mr. Phil Wayne, you the members with a muse or two, and we also have another feature for you. So stay tuned to your DX Audio Service.
For the red, white, and blue, 1260 WWOK.